The BBC presents Gordon Jackson in The Same River Twice, a serial thriller in 8 parts by Edward Boyd. Johnny Maxson's search for his estranged wife, Julia, has apparently ended when she is found drowned near her Lochside cottage. But Inspector Wardlaw touches off a new search. The Same River Twice, Part 6.
Johnny Maxson?
Wardlaw speaking. I was trying to get you earlier.
I was out breaking the news to Julia's mother.
What did you tell her?
What kind of a fool question is that? I told her that Julia had been found drowned.
Then you misinformed her.
What's this?
Your wife was not drowned, Maxson. According to our forensic experts, she was strangled.
After that, the telephone began to ring and ring and ring, and it rang and rang and rang, and I let it, being otherwise engaged, thinking, which is something I sometimes do when nothing better offers. As an aide to thought, I had a bottle of malt whiskey I'd found in the kitchen. So I sat there, killing the bottle. And intermittently the phone would ring, then sulk, then ring again. Well, I sat there and asked myself things about my dead wife. Things like, who was she? And where was she from? Then suddenly the phone had competition from the doorbell, and I went along and opened up. A young man stood there.
Mr. John Maxson?
Yes?
My name's David Williams.
What are you selling?
I'd like to talk to you about your wife.
You would, eh?
If you don't mind.
And supposing I do mind.
I'd understand that as a person, but professionally...
Oh, no, not a newspaper man.
Yes.
What's wrong with you? Are you too nervous to steal?
Mr. Maxson, I realize you're probably upset.
Why should I be upset?
Well, I mean your wife.
Seen one wife, you've seen them all.
Mr. Maxson, I didn't expect...
Why don't you get quietly lost?
Because I have something important to tell you.
Just what would you call important?
You want to find out who killed your wife, don't you?
Now, what makes you think that?
You have to be joking.
Why should I joke at a solemn moment like this? What am I supposed to do? Stand here listening to you coming on like the angel of justice, then burst into tears and show you snapshots of the honeymoon at Weston-super-Mare?
Mr. Maxson, are you trying to tell me you don't care about your wife's death?
Are you trying to tell me you care? You and whatever trashy rag you represent?
I'd still like to talk to you.
All right, then. Come on in.
Thank you.
I've been sitting in here with my memories, as you'd probably say. Like a drink?
No, thank you.
In a huff?
I have a weak stomach.
You won't last long in journalism, then.
You didn't last very long yourself as a writer.
You have been doing your homework, haven't you?
I've met you once before.
When?
I was only 14 at the time. My father was a member of the literary club. He took me along one day to hear you speak.
Next thing you'll be telling me you've read my one and only book.
I have. And I thought it was...
I don't care what you thought.
Look, Mr. Maxson... I can understand you not liking the press. Lots of people don't. Not without reason. Sometimes I don't like it very much myself.
Well, this is beginning to sound like the soft sell.
It may even be that. But anyway, I'm risking my job on it. If you knew my editor...
What's his name?
McIntyre.
I do know him. A hatchet man. What did you have in mind that might make him fire you?
A contact that claims to have information about the night your wife died.
And what night does he say that was?
Friday the 23rd of October. Does that sound likely?
Very. And you haven't told your editor about this?
No.
Why not?
I wanted to make a deal with you.
What kind of a deal?
When this thing breaks, I want your exclusive story.
And what do you offer in return?
The name of my contact.
It's a deal.
Thank you.
Want me to put it in writing?
I don't think that's necessary.
You're too trusting.
Not usually. I trust you.
Do I know your contact?
Yes.
Who is it?
He's a poacher.
Ah, yes. Yes, it would be him.
You've guessed who it is?
Bunty Nickel.
Yes.
Poacher, Peeping Tom, petty thief.
Are you trying to back out of the deal?
No, I am trying desperately not to say fate chooses some strange instruments. Where did you meet Bunty Nickel?
I've known him for some time. I've got a boat in the loch. He looks after it in the winter.
Did he contact you personally?
No, he phoned.
Did he give you any hint of what he knew?
No, he just said he knew something.
Where did he suggest you meet him if you wanted to?
Where do you think?
The hotel. That way there'd be a bonus of free drinks.
You know him all right.
I do indeed. And I think I might just go down there and see him tonight. He went off with his fair hair and his big deal and his newspaper future reaching for him with huge corrupting fingers. I gave the whiskey bottle decent burial, went to the telephone and dialed a number. It was my night, for her father didn't answer, so I didn't have to listen once again to a paraphrase of Holy Willie's prayer. I got straight through to Dorothy herself. Well, not quite straight through.
Dorothy, have a go.
Johnny.
I should have known.
Why should you have known?
You always phone when I'm in the bath.
I'm trying to save you from yourself.
Uh-huh.
You bath too much. Bad for the natural oils and the skin.
It's a choice between that and my friends whispering dreadful warnings to me. What can I do for you, apart from sitting here catching pneumonia?
Have you still got that car?
No.
Oh, pity.
You don't think I'd still have the same old model after 5 years?
Then you do have a car.
I told you, Johnny, I've sold out to the affluent society.
I'd like to go somewhere tonight.
Out of town, you mean?
Yes.
Why not? Where did you have in mind?
The Loch Darragh Hotel.
Oh.
Hello. Hello, are you still there, Dorothy?
Yes, I'm still here.
What's wrong?
Don't you know?
Julia?
Yes, Johnny. Look, I'll lend you the car.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Dorothy.
Well, Loch Darragh is rather Julia territory, isn't it?
Put your clothes on. You're a stranger.
Oh, don't be silly, Johnny.
That's funny. I was just about to say that to you.
Sometimes you can be so insensitive.
This isn't one of those times.
Where'll I meet you?
That's my girl.
Don't give me that triumphant male bit. Just give me the facts.
Why not come here?
And climb all those stairs.
I'll meet you at the corner, then.
7:30.
7:30. Ciao.
Ciao.
I went back and sat in the gathering dark, drumming up enough lethargy not to do something that would have to be done eventually. Someone would have to go through Julia's effects. But later, later. And please, not me. Not me. When you're going to stop running, Johnny? A man's got to stop running one day, Johnny. One day he runs out of places to run. Yeah, 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 and thank you, Big John Wayne. Anyway, to cut a long western short, I ran. And my running took me to a rinky little tea room. It was done up in contemporary Oriental, the Japanese bit. The man I was looking for was there, as I had known he would be. He was a creature of habit. Big, heavily built, soft-spoken, gentle. His name was Ian Wotherspoon, and as a psychiatrist, he was a creature of other people's habits, too.
I heard you were back, Johnny.
You're looking well, me old love.
Oh, feeling it, too. Let me pour you a cup of tea.
Please do.
The girl always brings an extra cup. She knows I always have company.
Are people pumping you for free advice?
Less often than you'd think. Help yourself to milk and sugar. You want to talk to me about Julia, don't you?
I don't know. Someone told me she'd been seeing a psychiatrist. I thought it might have been you.
It was.
How are your professional ethics these days?
I've been known to leave them in the office.
What was wrong with Julia?
I can't possibly answer that, Johnny. It's not a question of professional ethics either. It's simply that she didn't stay with me long enough for me to find out. I hate to bother you with jargon, but we never even approached a satisfactory state of transference. Would have taken a long time anyway, I knew that. Very dominating character, Julia. A strong masculine protest there.
I've got scars to prove it.
That accident when your daughter was drowned, that left Julia filled with a traumatic guilt.
If it was an accident, why should she feel guilty?
Oh, it's quite normal. Even in ordinary cases of bereavement, you get it. People feel guilt because of their sins of omission or commission towards the dead person. Sometimes these sins are so small as to be almost ludicrous.
Oh, it wears off in time, though, I should imagine.
With Julia, it was getting worse.
Now, why would that be, do you think?
Again, I wouldn't know. But she was building up a pretty solid framework of delusions.
What kind of delusions?
Well, there were the telephone calls. She'd pick up the receiver and get a load of heavy breathing.
Oh, lots of women get that. Oh,
I know, but I'm talking about this as part of a delusional system. Then there were the sick letters and the birthday cards that came for your daughter every year after her death.
Did Julie ever show you any of these?
I never had any proof that they existed outside of her head.
Anything else?
Oh, plenty. She'd pick up the telephone and hear your daughter's voice. A tape recording, she said, which of course was simply a rationalization. She stopped going down to the cottage because she was wakened by fingers tapping on the window. Always about the time the accident happened, she insisted. And she claimed she was being blackmailed.
Absolutely mad.
Not a word I like, but...
What do you know of this accident, Ian?
Well, nothing. Every time we touched on it, there was a complete blockage.
Sounds like Julia was developing a pretty strong case of persecution mania.
Oh, work it out for yourself.
And who did you think was the arch persecutor?
You, Johnny.
You can't be serious.
I'm simply reporting, not making value judgments.
When did you last see her?
Late afternoon of Friday, October the 23rd.
Consultation?
No. A rather strange social visit.
What was strange about it?
Well, she dropped in unexpectedly at my place in the late afternoon. I was between patients and we sat and talked. She was tremendously excited, elated. Words came pouring out of her.
What did she say?
She said that she knew I'd always been on your side, and because of that, I had a vested interest in persuading her she was disturbed. But now she would show me and all my Freudian claptrap for the phonies we both were. Now she not only suspected you were behind all these things that were happening to her, she had proof.
But I haven't been in the country for nearly 5 years.
Well, I pointed that out to her and she just laughed.
Oh, man, if stuff like this keeps blowing up, I'm going to be booking one of your coaches, too.
Johnny, I'm not a psychiatrist all the time. Sometimes I take off the white coat, put on a sports jacket, and go down into the marketplace.
Are you trying to tell me something?
You know, I buy a lot of paintings.
Of course, you always did.
There's a young artist I'm interested in. A girl. An important talent, I think.
What's that got to do with what we've been talking about?
Here's where she lives.
Oh, yes, but...
Just go along to that address, ask for Martina Stevens, and tell her your name is Johnny Maxson.
Martina Stevens' studio was in an old building that looked as though it had never been anything else but old. But the studio itself was neat, almost prissy. Oil stoves were dotted strategically and vainly at scattered intervals. Martina Stevens herself was small and dark and good-looking and serene. A friend of yours sent me.
Now, who would that be?
Ian Wotherspoon.
Ah, Ian. A nice man. How is he?
Nicer than ever.
That's nice. Oh. I'm one of the world's great conversationalists.
That's nice, too.
Would you like some coffee?
No, not to worry. I've been imbibing one thing and another all day.
It's no trouble at all, I assure you. Oh, dear, now I'm putting on my sales talk voice.
You don't have to. Ian's selling you all the time.
Oh. Best thing is for you to have a look round. Don't waste your time on the pictures over there. I was on a pop-out kick at the time. All that happened was a load of junk.
Which is your latest work?
Over there. Do you buy a lot of paintings?
Not as many as I'd like to.
You know, you never told me who you were.
Ian suggested I should watch what happened when I told you I was Johnny Maxson.
Well, how about you?
I'm playing this very cool till I know more.
The mystery voice on the phone.
Me?
Yes, you. Did you get the painting all right?
No, I didn't.
Well, I did exactly what you told me.
And what exactly did I tell you?
Look, what is this?
Now, don't be alarmed.
I'm not.
I'm just as baffled by all this as you are. I never phoned you in my life, Martina. I didn't know you existed till about an hour ago.
Let's try and work this thing out, whatever it is.
Start with a phone call.
About 7 months ago, a man phoned me. He said his name was Johnny Maxson. He said he'd seen my work, liked it, and wanted to commission something from me. He asked if I did portraits, and I said I was so broke I'd paint his pet dog if that was what he wanted.
What did he want?
It was kind of weird, the whole thing. He said he would send me £50 and be in touch with me within a week.
The £50 arrived?
The very next morning. Then he phoned again and said he was sending me along a photograph. He wanted a portrait painted from it, but not just something square and academic. He said he saw the girl in the photograph as... what's the name of that dreary girl in Hamlet that goes mad in white linen?
Ophelia.
Yes, that's it. Ophelia.
What's bothering you?
Do you paint or write or anything?
I used to be a writer.
Did you ever write anything that frightened you?
I know exactly what you mean.
This picture I painted did that to me. It was good, one of the best things I've done, but... oh, weird. I called it Drowned Girl.
Why?
Don't really know.
Where did you deliver the painting?
I didn't. The man on the phone came and collected it. He'd been keeping in touch, checking on progress, and one day I told him it was finished, and what now? He said he'd arranged to have it picked up that night, and I told him I was going out, and he said to go right ahead, just leave the painting outside the studio door, which I did. And when I got back later, much later, the picture was gone. I wasn't sorry either. Weird.
So nobody saw who collected it?
No. But a friend of mine said he saw a green van drive away.
Well, that doesn't mean a thing.
It might, and it might not.
Did this friend of yours get the number of the van?
Nobody goes around doing that.
That photograph you were sent, do you still have it?
It's still around somewhere.
Well, I'd like to see it.
I keep things like that over here in a folder. There it is. Anyone you know?
Yes. She was my daughter. He who goes fathering, the man says, gives fearful hostages to hazardry. That's what the man said, and he was right. And suppose we leave it at that. Dorothy was waiting with the car at the place she said, and at the time she'd said, and I climbed in beside her.
Bang on time.
Some women do anything to be different.
Do you want to go straight to the hotel?
I'd like to go down to the cottage first. Or if you see a small shop, let's stop and pick up a torch.
No need for that. There's one in the glove compartment.
You think of everything.
Good. Here goes nothing, then.
Dorothy drove well. She was one of these people who do everything well, but not so alarmingly well as to be singled out for notice.
You don't drive at all now, do you, Johnny?
No. Just another thing I gave up.
Why did you give up writing, Johnny?
I couldn't stand the loneliness.
Now, that answer came pretty flip, didn't it?
Answers come flip in two kinds. The ones you don't give any thought to and the ones you've thought right through.
And this is one you've thought right through.
Yes.
Don't you ever get the urge to write now?
When I do, I go and take a cold shower.
I don't think you're being honest.
About what?
About not being able to stand the loneliness.
What makes you doubt my honesty?
You haven't written for years, and you're lonelier than you've ever been.
All right, teacher, tell me all about me.
I think Julia ate you up.
You mustn't be jealous of Julia.
I wasn't aware I was.
In a way, yes, you were being unfair. And that's a very revealing symptom. You see, I don't think Julia could bear the loneliness either.
Julia, lonely?
She was spoiled. She was domineering. She was an exhibitionist. She needed someone to dance attendance on her. I've never been much of a dancer, and I've always been self-centered. And not selfish, self-centered.
She should have married some rich, elderly man.
So she should. But that wouldn't have been dramatic. Any attractive woman can do that. But for an attractive woman to sacrifice everything for a genius in a garret... Ah, now that was really something.
Was that what she thought she was doing?
I think so.
I didn't think she was capable of that kind of vulgarity.
Oh, she was. She was a strange mixture of the naive and the very, very shrewd. Trouble was, you never knew at any moment which part of the mixture you were dealing with.
I can imagine that could become terrifying.
It did. And by, in self-defense, you stopped caring, and well, that became a bore.
And you both became less than human.
Yes. Julia didn't even need other women to be jealous of. The one affair that would always defeat her was the one I had with my typewriter.
Which brings us back to the original question. Why did you break that affair off?
You're a very subtle lady.
Oh, never mind that. Answer the question.
All right, then. I suppose Julia does enter into it to a certain extent. I suppose as the years went on, we became irrelevant to each other. And it dawned on me that the only aspect of me that really counted any longer with Julia was the writer. I hated her so much, I deliberately destroyed him.
Could you resurrect him?
I don't think you would like him.
That's something I'd have to make up my own mind on.
No, darling, it's not.
Why not?
You should read Frankenstein again.
I can't understand it. I can't understand a man deliberately, wantonly doing what you did for the reasons you say.
Maybe they were only the near-at-hand reasons.
What does that mean?
You can make a symbol of anything. Maybe I made Julia one. Maybe I was sick of the phony world she liked to think she represented.
I still think you haven't got Julia out of your system.
Listen, about 2 years ago, I sat in the Luxembourg Gardens and tried to remember one happy moment I'd had with Julia. I couldn't remember one.
Not even one?
Not one. And no later than this afternoon, I sat trying to remember anything at all about my life with Julia. Anything at all.
And there was nothing?
Nothing.
What chance has your French girl in that case?
Solange? No chance at all.
And me?
You have been warned.
At least you don't play favorites. If all this is true, Johnny, why did you come back?
I came back because Julia's mother asked me.
You're very fond of her, aren't you?
Very.
Any other reason?
My daughter, Sarah.
What did you intend to do about Sarah, Johnny? Bring her back to life.
What did you say?
That's the way you've been talking, isn't it? Superman. High above the battle, passing judgment. It's all so easy up there in your chilly Arctic cloud, watching the rest of us shuffling and scuffling in the dirty, sordid world. I don't wish to know about that struggling, sweaty stramash down there. And will you kindly pass me the rose water?
Have you quite finished?
No. And don't come all over dignified with me. I lived with dignity for years in the person of my stupid father. And I know it for what it is. A defense for people who have no other defense.
Look, I'm tired.
Oh, you're tired, all right. You're tired of life. So you'll just withdraw and let the rest of us morons get on with it as best we may. And you know how good that'll be. Maybe Julia was too much life for you. Maybe Solange is. Maybe I am, too.
What do I have to do to disprove that? Assault you?
We're here. Get out and open the gate.
Are you coming?
Of course. Have you got the torch?
Of course.
Johnny.
What?
I'm sorry.
Forget it.
You should say I deserved all I got.
But I didn't. Some changes here from the old Pioneer Track oil lamp days.
The place has been on the grid for nearly 2 years.
Electricity yet. Let's see if there's anything to see. Same old door, anyway.
It used to be a swine to open.
Probably still is. Ah, there we are.
Black as pitch inside. Shine a light. The switch box is up on the left.
No. No.
What is it, Johnny? Oh!
The sixth part of The Same River Twice, a serial in 8 parts by Edward Boyd, was produced for the BBC by Eddie Fraser.